Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with the episode 10 recap of Survivor 42. Alexa is off tonight, and that means I'm joined by Vaughn, one of my favorite episodes every season that we have him on. Vaughn's actually back this time to talk about his pick and everything, because at the beginning of this season, he did the fantasy game with Alexa and I. He helped us come up with some of the rules and everything. He just lost his second person in a row from his fantasy team. He was looking really, really good for a while there, so got to talk a little trash on that. But he's here. He's ready to break down this episode. Final eight, High goes home. High was surprised. Can't say I was overly surprised. I felt like Jonathan was a red herring, but who knows? What do you think about this season so far? What do you think about tonight? And how are you feeling about that fantasy team that just got two exits in, I think, 3 days of Survivor time?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's three questions. First of all, Bill, it's a pleasure to join you as always. Happy to be back. I think this is my first in-season appearance in probably a couple of years, so it's great to be here. Also, I'm just now noticing, looking at myself, my photo of my own self, that I actually have a pretty nasty bruise here from, it's very hardcore, in case anyone's wondering at home, I played pickleball the other day and got hit in the face by a pickleball, which is how you know that I am a true badass. But anyway, injuries aside, I love this season. It's awesome. I kind of wish that, as brutal as parts of last year were, that I really enjoyed the Erica victory, I kind of wish that every Survivor season just got like a warm-up round, because essentially all the kinks that they had last season, they were able to just work out and smooth over. They got a little bit more casting luck because this year's cast is amazing. And when you combine those two things, it ends up being a really, really awesome season. So I'm loving it. I think this is the best cast that I can remember in a long time. I think the gameplay has been good. I think the twists have not been over the top, at least so far. So I'm really enjoying it. And I think that we're going to end up getting a really cool winner out of it. Your second question was what I thought of tonight. And of course, we can get into it in more detail. I think my top of the line take here is, I think we probably, most people saw High's boot coming for a while. I think the show has been kind of beating us over the head with the idea that he's been getting too cocky. And I think, we really just saw a huge disconnect tonight between what he thought was happening, which is that he was still running the show, and what was actually happening, which is that basically every other person on the island was totally fine with him leaving. Mm-hmm. And I think really what it came down to for High is that he doesn't have the personal connections out there, the one-on-one connections that I think some other people still in the game have. I think he was really insulated by that big alliance. He probably had the most to gain from that big alliance staying intact longer. And so he unwittingly sort of hoisted himself by his own petard, I think, last week by engineering the Roxroy boot. Because I think once you rip the Band-Aid off of that big alliance and people start not seeing that as an inevitable force, then all of a sudden he became really vulnerable. Because once people felt free to target people in the big alliance, he was clearly the one that was kind of on an island. And of course, Omar helped push him along with some incredible gameplay tonight. And that leads me to your third question, which is what I think of my fantasy team. I hate losing Tori, who was, I think, one of those really rootable villains, who turned out was not amazing at Survivor. I thought she'd be better, but was really, really entertaining. And I was rooting for her to stay in the game, not just for the sake of my fantasy team, but also because she was just sort of fun to root against. Mm-hmm. I do hate to lose High. I think he had a lot of promise. I think he has a really powerful personal story. I think he's pretty good at the game, but ultimately just couldn't make enough personal connections. It was really kind of run circles around by another member of my fantasy team, Omer, who, along with sort of Marianne, were kind of my two winner picks at the beginning of the season. I didn't know. I was sort of oscillated between the two. Ended up going with Omer mostly because I got to wear an animal-themed shirt and make it connect. But I'm really, even though, I think I'm behind you in the standings, I think between Lindsay, Omer, and Marianne, I'm feeling pretty good right now. Lindsay had a breakout episode tonight. It really has two good episodes back-to-back. Mm-hmm. Omer is incredible, right? I mean, wow. I mean, he is a strategic mastermind. We can talk more about that. And I think Marianne has some really sneaky winner upside too, because I think that her narrative about being kind of quirky and being herself really kind of gives me some Erica vibes from last year. She's just kind of always there. She's always part of the narrative. We're always hearing her perspective and her strategic take on things. So I think the winner is on my team. So I think I'm going to bring home another gold medal here.
See, I'm just thankful that we instituted this cursed player rule, because Alexa giving me double points on Jonathan, and the fact that Jonathan is now at the final seven. Next week, we're going to get the do or die twist. We know that that's coming. We know that anything can happen with that. I think a lot of people are going to sit out. I think it's going to be a challenge that Jonathan's going to win. That gets me 6 points. If I'm beating you by more than 10 at that final tribal council, it doesn't matter. But you brought up a lot of good points with everything that's going on here. I couldn't agree more with you about this cast. I think this is a phenomenal cast, and I think they've done just a great job of perfecting the types of people that they want on the show at this point. I feel like when, you know, it's that the big diversity campaign and all that, I feel like there was a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to, okay, as long as we hit this, you know, mark, that's all that people are going to care about. No, at the end of the day, people want rootable people in all of these areas that they want. Like they want to be able to root for everybody. And I would say that on this season, I agree with you. Tori, really fun, rootable villain who you knew wasn't going to win. Romeo, fun, rootable villain right now that you know isn't going to win. Other than that, and I know Jonathan's edit took a nosedive last week, but other than that, I could see any of them winning for any particular reason, especially with Lindsay's edit really picking up in the last two episodes. And we'll talk about Lindsay tonight, maybe about some of her decisions, how we feel about those, how we feel about her trying to go after Jonathan. But I do think that when we break this down, whether Omer wins or not, whether he wins or not, it doesn't matter. He might be the best pure survivor player, like just survivor player. You don't have to win to be a great survivor player. Jonathan Penner proved that. Like, you don't have to win to be great at survivor. He might be the best survivor player we've seen since Heroes versus Villains. Like, he just knows what he's doing. And yeah, Tony is the best survivor player of all time. I'm not stating that. But in terms of coming out and just having a knowledge for the game and knowing how to work people against each other and knowing how to stay in the shadows and just take everything that has happened for 41 seasons of Survivor, and he'd only seen 40, but use that to his advantage to be able to navigate all of these weird twists and all of the differing alliances and everything like that and make everybody believe what he wants. He understands this game better than most people understand this game. And he might, and look, like I said, Tony's the king. He might understand this game better than Tony did when he went and played Kageyan. Like, Omer just gets Survivor. He was born to play this game. Yes, he's playing in this new school era where anything can happen, but if he played in the 20s, he's your Cochran, except he's probably going to win South Pacific rather than just be a GOAT. Like, it's just going to happen. I just think he is playing an absolutely phenomenal game right now. I think he just has such an understanding of what it takes to play Survivor. And I just think he's doing a great job. And I love watching what he's doing and how he's able to spin this web around everybody. And he's on your fantasy team, so I'm talking him up. But he was your winner pick preseason. Yeah. I mean, why is he able to pull all of this off right now?
Yeah, well, I have loved to be right about him because I saw the strategic upside, but not on this level. I don't think anyone could have seen this virtuoso performance coming. What I saw in him that I think ultimately what he's using to his advantage is that people underestimate him. You know, I think people view him in a certain light as, you know, kind of a funny, quirky, nerdy guy. He's been able to connect with people on a number of different ways. I mean, he was able to connect with Mike over his Muslim faith, for example. Mm-hmm. And he's been able to, he's done a really masterful job of sort of hanging under the radar, pulling the strings behind the scenes without people really catching on. And I think what's really been a joy to watch, and we've seen some of the great Survivor players do this, is he uses the people who are currently on the outs and he brings them close to him because he never knows when he might need them. And so right now, you even heard him say in the episode that he's got Marianne and Romeo. You know, he said that if he wanted to flip the vote on Jonathan, he could because he felt like he had Marianne and Romeo. And I think to the extent that he has those two votes locked in, it's because he's been cultivating the minority, the outcasts, the misfits the entire time. Every time someone feels like they're on the outs, Omer either votes them out because there may be a reason for that, or he brings them closer to himself. But I will say this, I mean, there's a silver lining here, which is that I think that there are two paths that this season is going to end on. One path is that Omer wins, and I think if he's at the end, he will 100% win. I think it'll go down as one of the more obvious winner edits in Survivor history. And I think it'll also go down as one of the most dominant performances in Survivor history. We might be talking about Omer, you know, as you say, is maybe even a top, something like a top five Survivor winner if he continues on this pace. But the other option here, and you know, he's my winner pick, so I hate to say this, but I think this could end up being the slightly, you know, more likely, maybe a 60-40, 70-30 likelihood here, is that consistent with what we've been hearing, one of the themes of the season is this whole idea, we heard it in Tribal tonight, of the runner who gets too far ahead of the pack and gets their heads lopped off. Omer himself said that. I think we could find him overplaying here. And I think that we even saw a little bit of hints of it tonight. You know, I think the idea that he was even, it could have been a red herring, but I think that the fact that he was even contemplating of a last minute vote flip onto Jonathan just because he could, I think suggests that maybe the power is getting to his head a little bit. Kind of like what happened with High. I worry a little bit, and maybe this is just because I'm so invested in him, but I worry a little bit that he's going to overplay, that people are going to start comparing notes on him. I mean, had he left High in the game tonight, what's to stop High from having a conversation, a heartfelt conversation with Mike, and denying that High, you know, High had ever said anything about a puppet, right? I'm not even sure Omer was considering those possibilities. So I do worry about overplaying. I worry about people eventually getting wise to him because, hey, I mean, we've still got seven people left, right? I mean, it's a little early for him to be peaking, I worry. But if he can continue staying under the radar, not feel like he needs to necessarily dominate every vote, he's certainly not on the immediate chopping block. I just worry, number one, could he win a fire-making challenge if it came down to it? Number two, you know, he's got to avoid sort of becoming a Ricard situation where at the very end people start seeing him for the dominant strategic force and jury threat that he could be.
Yeah, and that's why, like, when I'm looking at it, I think regardless of where he finishes, he just gets the game. Like, he just gets it. It doesn't matter.
And I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you.
Like, I just think he has a mind. I think he has a better mind for it than Adam Klein does. Like, I really do. And Adam Klein, like, played a great game, and Adam Klein played it the way he had to play it and all of that. But I really think that this guy just has such a mind for the game. However, he is now in the landmine portion of what has been since the 30s. He is in the portion of the game where you, as we get closer to the end, you have less and less control, and there's really nothing you can do about it. We saw it with Janet Carbon. She gets all the way to Final Five. She knows she's the best fire maker, and she has an idol, and she loses because of an idol nullifier that comes into play 2 days before. Like, and that's where right now is scary. We know Do or Die is coming back. Do or Die could screw over him. It could screw over Drea, who has all these advantages. We heard last season, it doesn't matter what advantages you have, you can't play him. Marianne could get screwed by it. She has an idol. There are so many things that can happen. Then you get the final six. Well, let's say that it's Mike who goes, not Mike, because Mike has an idol. Let's say it's Romeo who goes home next week. He had no merit in the game anyway. It doesn't matter. Now you have three idols at final six, right? You have Marianne's, you have Drea's. Well, you have Drea's knowledge is power, and then you have Mike's idol. That's a hard tribal council to get through.
Yeah.
And you have a steal the vote still in the game. There's so many things. And I think Marianne still has her extra vote, if I'm not mistaken. It's too much to keep track of. But we're at the minefield portion. Then you get to final four and there's fire. There is no clear cut path for him to get there and win it. There's no clear cut path for anybody to get there and win it. But that's why I want to say this now about Omer, because he's, you know, and I'm probably going to get a rash of shit for it because people are going to be like, are you serious, Phil? Like, you're going to say this? Do you realize, like, I already saw Kim, Jeremy, whatever. I'm not saying overall player. He's not going to end up on my Rushmore. He's not going to end up in my top 30. He's probably not going to end up in my top 50. However, just in terms of the knowledge he has for the game, it is second to none. And he's using it so well to his advantage that if he does win, like you said, now maybe all of a sudden he is coming up there if he wins. Yeah. However, there's just so much for him to navigate for the rest of this game. I'm not ready to sit here and say Omer's going to win. And I've been, in fact, saying he's more of a David Wright to me right now.
Sure.
Gets the game, huge fan favorite. He's starting to drive the votes. And at the end of the day, we're going to have three people that everybody was kind of okay on. Maybe like a Mike, a Drea, and a Lindsay sitting at final three. And you're going to go, well, who's going to win? Well, who do you prefer? And you're not going to feel as, like, satisfied necessarily as if you had gotten the Omer win. And so that's where I stand with all that. I do think Omer's still going to end up going down. There's just too much stuff that can happen. And also, they got to realize at some point, right? I mean, this is a smart group of players. I feel like this is one of the best. I think the reason this is such a great cast is because they all really understand the game of Survivor, maybe with the exception of Jonathan. But like, I think Jonathan understands the competition aspect of it. There's people, if you look at season 35, 36, 37, 38, they don't understand any of it. They don't get the competition. They don't get the game. They don't understand it. They're just there, and they exist, and they're not fun to watch. I think this cast is too good to let somebody like Omer get to the final three and win the game in a landslide.
I think that's probably right. But I think I'm glad that you raised his brilliance, because I think a lot of people have worried in recent years, you know, is Survivor headed because of all the tricks up everyone's sleeves in the late game, because of the fire? People worry if this kind of player is going to go away. Is everyone going to, or everyone going to start playing so cautiously and trying to be sort of an Erica until the very end and then make a move? If Survivor goes in that direction, I don't think it will, but if Survivor goes in that direction, you know, there's a real concern that it's going to be less fun to watch. People like Omer that are good at, just naturally good at Survivor and not afraid to play it really hard like this, are fun to watch. Yeah. You know, it is a joy to watch him go, and it makes the show more enjoyable. So even if he doesn't pull it off, I'm glad that we're both saying this, because we need future people to go on the show, if they have these gifts, to not shy away from letting it fly out of fear that they're going to get voted out quickly.
And I think that's what this season is telling a lot of people. And I think that's what the newer era of Survivor is going to be about. I think it's going to harken back to like the first 15 seasons, which was everybody's favorite era. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I should have said first 20 seasons, but it's going to harken back to that era of, we loved Rudy and Rich because they were Rudy and Rich. Sue Hawk played two seasons of Survivor. There's nothing particularly likable about Sue Hawk, but she played two seasons of Survivor because she was so authentically herself. We saw that all through the early seasons. I know a lot of people with last week's conversation, we're doing a lot with Sean and Vesepia, and their talks about race and what it was like to be then, like be people of color back in 2002, and how different that was, and their feelings, and why they wanted to be there together and play this game together, but how they were willing, if we had to, we don't need to go to the end together. There's something very authentic that's happening right here on this cast. And we're seeing every single one of them play it authentically themselves. Marianne is Marianne. Omer is Omer. Mike is Mike. Mike says some stupid stuff, but he's also got moments of brilliance. He got played like a fiddle by Omer, but so what? That happens. You can get played by a fiddle. If you're sitting at the end, he's probably still going to maybe vote for you. It doesn't matter. And I think that's what is so enjoyable about this. And I think that's what has really, really worked. And why, when you look over at the jury, you have four people sitting there who are completely different styles of gameplay, completely different knowledges of the game, all of that. And then you look at the people who are in the game, and you have seven who are in that same boat. They all are on different spectrums as the Survivor player, and it's really working. And tonight, we had a breakout episode for somebody who had been non-existent for a long time on this season, and that's Lindsay. And how are you feeling about Lindsay? Because we clearly read her wrong. We were ready to give people points for her fighting with people. I know we were both a little bit higher on her, but how are you feeling about this, and what are you reading into the fact that she's starting to pick up a little bit here?
Yeah. I like Lindsay a lot. I mean, she's had a quiet presence. There were little bits here and there, if you squinted hard enough throughout the season, that she was a real gamer. Now she's sort of trying, you know, finally coming in to her own in the last couple of episodes, finally getting some well-deserved screen time. I like the idea that she's trying to separate from Jonathan. I like that she has the self-awareness to recognize that he might be an anchor for her game if people see them as a tight pair, and if Jonathan's going off and doing dumb stuff, that may not help her. And we also seen scenarios in Survivor where a tight pair, one of them goes and the other one is able to go far because the threat of the duo has been nullified. So I think she has the right instincts here. I mean, I do think the sort of the silver lining for Lindsay is, while in this episode she dominated in some ways, right? She won both challenges. I think she made excellent choices on who to bring to the reward challenge. That ended up bearing fruit immediately. Of course, it worked out great for Omer as well. They were able to strengthen that relationship with Mike. They were able to dupe him a little bit. And we also saw in the preview for next episode, though obviously that's not canon and we could be being duped, but we did see that sort of pizza and beer trio teaming up with Drea and at least forming a fake Final Four, you know, if not a real Final Four, at least that's what it seemed to be showing us. So Lindsay made a lot of good, you know, decisions surrounding the challenges. She crushed the immunity challenge. That was cool to watch as well. But two things, you know, one, we've seen all episode, even dating back to last episode, where she questions Jonathan's strategic abilities. She's really kind of made Jonathan this sort of big target that she wants to take out. She wants this to be her move. She wants to separate herself from him, add a line to her resume, and ultimately doesn't get her way. She's ultimately, I think, overwhelmed by the sheer force of everyone being willing to get high out. Mm-hmm. But I do think, both from an edit perspective and a game perspective, I think that it maybe that was her moment, and I worry that maybe that will come back to bite her. Also, we saw, sadly, that she got some Dodo music when she literally touched the hidden immunity idol. I think that's the first time I can remember someone getting so close to it. I think she physically touched it and not getting it. And, of course, then Marianne finds it not too long afterwards. So I think for Lindsay, it's a little bit of a two steps forward, one step back. You know, she's finally on our screen. She's awesome. I think I love her energy. I love her confessionals. She dominates both challenges. She finally gets to have a little bit of agency in the game, but she was that close to having a true breakout episode where she starts catapulting all the way to the top of people's winner rankings because she's got an idol and she starts getting her way in votes. You know, neither of those things happen. So to me, she's still a contender, but she's not necessarily in the top tier.
And what's amazing is Lindsay found out tonight how close she was to grabbing that, because she doesn't know how close she was, because how would she ever know? So she finds out how close she was probably to winning $1 million, because I think that she's going to be sixth, fifth place. I think she's going to make it through next week. If she gets to sixth or fifth place, one idol, that's all it would have taken. And who knows if Drea goes home before her, which is going to be harder for people to do. But if Drea were to go home before her, now she could have had two idols at final six. Just play one at six, play one at five, go win fire, and you're in the final three and you could win the game, because everybody's going to say, wow, you did everything you were supposed to do. So I do agree. There was some good, there was some bad, all that. Totally agree with you, though. The decisions she made tonight were perfect. Omer, great person to take on a reward here.
Yeah.
And Mike was another good one. I think that Mike is somebody nobody's ever going to get mad at you for taking to do anything.
Yep.
I really do believe in my heart of hearts that this is the story of Mike on this season. I really do. And I think we're seeing all of his flaws and all of his perks. There's nobody with a flawless edit on this season. You know, I don't care what anybody says. We have seen flaws for every single one of these people. Some of them are a little more egregious than others, but everybody has their flaws. I feel like this is Mike's story. And I feel like whether that means Mike is going to win or just miss winning, I feel like this is his story. Because nobody gets mad with Mike or at Mike. Everybody just talks to Mike. Mike isn't Omer because he doesn't understand the game as well as Omer, but he is so good at talking to every single person on this island and getting to connect with them on a real human level. And it is making moments like Omer duping him, because now Omer wants to go a little bit further with him to get rid of the strongest person in the game. But if Mike ever figures it out, he could Bob Crowley this for sure. Like, why couldn't he? And I think that's what's so fascinating about Mike. Whether he wins or not, this season to me feels like Mike's story. If he doesn't win, the other person who does win is going to have to pick up a little bit in these next couple episodes to have it become their story. Marianne's pretty close here, I'm not going to lie. But Mike and Marianne, to me, they're really the only two that we've got. Like, and Omer, obviously.
Sure.
Those three are the ones who it's like, know you. Yeah. I really know you. I know what you're good at. I know what you're bad at. I know your flaws, and I know how you use your flaws to your advantage. And all of them are very good at doing that.
Yeah, you know, I'll say with Mike, he's not someone I was super high on preseason. It's not an archetype that I'm usually just sort of naturally drawn to, you know, the sort of older dad firefighter. I know that historically it's an archetype that's done well. It's just not one that for me pops off the screen. You know, Tony, I guess, if he falls into that, being the exception. Mm-hmm. But Mike has really won me over, and it's because he's just one of the most genuine and just pure likable people that I can remember seeing on the show. Mm-hmm. Everyone is drawn to him, you know, no matter how young you are, how old you are, what you look like, everyone, sees something to like in Mike. And I think, you know, when you're talking about, we talked about Omer, I'm sure we'll get to Jonathan. We're talking about Mike. I really think that you're seeing some of the most pure versions of the three parts of the game we've ever seen in one season. With Omer, the strategic side, there, as you've noted, there are very few people that I can think of in their first time around, in at least the last, you know, handful of years, that were as good strategically as Omer, whether he wins or not. Of course, Jonathan, everyone knows, it's the most obvious to anyone watching, even the most casual fan, that he's one of the most dominant challenge beasts. Certainly pre-merge, he has not dominated quite as much in terms of actually getting the immunity necklace post-merge, but that could still be to come. And I think Mike, really, yes, he's been duped. Yes, he's kind of looked like a moron at various times. But I really think that his social game is just absolutely insane. You could stick him on an island with 19 strangers and run that random person generator 1,000 times. And I don't think that you would find a situation where there's not a tribe that doesn't almost universally, if not universally, just love Mike. That's just, he just has a gift. And there have been a few Survivor players that have that. And I think his empathy is what, you know, drives him. And I think that's what makes him so likable.
I agree. I really do. And I obviously I love this archetype. I know you and Alexa were making fun of me in the preseason. We were doing our fantasy game. And it was like, I remember you being like, well, this is the person Phil picks. This is it. This is what Phil does. But this is why I make the argument every year that they need to keep casting people like Mike, because you just have to cast the right people. And this goes back to where I think 42 is excelling. Don't just cast an old person to cast an old person and say, good, well, we got our old person out of the way. Cast an old person that's going to go out there and is going to eat up the screen time, and the younger people are going to have to compete with them. That's how it's got to be. And Mike is that person. Mike leads the season in confessionals. He has more confessionals than High and Omer, Andrea. He is leading the season in confessionals because he's just that likable of a guy. Even when he's messing up, you like him. You're rooting for him. You're laughing at him and with him. Like, it's something very weird. And I'm hoping that we start to see more of this type of player. Because not for nothing, and I actually do find him entertaining, but what this season is very much proving is that the Romeo character is falling out of Survivor. That character doesn't have as much of a place right now in the actual outcome of the game. That's a character they'll probably cast for a couple more seasons, but then they're going to say, is this person ever going to win? No, they're not going to win because we've hit a different level of Survivor. And not for nothing, Romeo hasn't eaten up that much screen time, and a lot of what he's saying is the same note. Now, that's not his fault. That's the editors choosing to use the same note on him. But that character doesn't allow for depth. Because I know that Romeo is giving a lot of good confessionals about emotional stories and backgrounds and his relationships with the people out there, because we heard him talk about how he might want a woman to win and he might be able to help that happen and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So we know it's there. But when you create a villainous strategic player who's always playing from the bottom, you don't allow for the emotion.
Yeah. And I do think
other six people have that. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that Romeo, is, you know, because of his position in the game, has unfortunately gotten that bad rap with the edit. I mean, there was a deleted scene from last episode that I'm sure most people saw where he sort of comes out as gay to the tribe. Apparently he had come out to High, but not the rest of the tribe. And it's really powerful. And it's kind of a shame that we couldn't have used up, you know, 3 minutes or a minute and a half from last episode to fit that in, because I think it really does speak a lot to who Romeo is a person. I think it's really powerful. And I would have liked to see more. But you're right that, I mean, I think just by virtue of his poor positioning in the game from the get-go, we have not gotten much from him other than, you know, even this episode of just kind of like him being jealous of the people going on the reward, him complaining about the hardship. I did think that, you know, in that scene, High, of course, you know, gets some personal content in his boot episode. That's when I really started thinking, oh, okay, High is going to be, he's going to make on the chopping block here. He's getting these cut scenes, but, you know, obviously extremely powerful content nonetheless. But I thought one thing that High said was interesting was that, you know, the pain out there is finite. You know, we've heard people say similar things before, but I think that, I know that was just a powerful, you know, confessional for me, him talking about how, as compared to poverty, where you're struggling and you don't know when it's going to end, if it ever will, versus being out on Survivor. Yeah, it's tough, but you know that you've only, you know, in their case, what do they say? It was like day 12, you know, that was like jarring, you know, it was like they were struggling in these short seasons. Really mess with your head when it's like, oh yeah, I can't believe we're, you know, it's like, it's day 12 and we only need four more days and we're over.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought, you know, I've liked what we've gotten out of Romeo to some extent, but I think if he were going to win or if he were doing better, we would be getting a much fuller picture of who he is as a person. But yeah, I mean, with Mike, going back to the episode tonight, I mean, obviously he was completely duped with the whole puppet thing. You know, Omar almost took a bit of a villain heel turn there when he was saying like, yeah, of course he believed that it's got to be a good lie, you know? And I was eating that up. Mike obviously looking a bit like a fool, but you know, he plays a personal game and that's what makes him rootable and lovable, right? He takes things personally. And I think people like to see that. I think, you know, for the vast majority of the viewership, they want to see people that are real humans out there and that aren't just going to brush off betrayal that easily. And I also think, you know, my last point on Mike is I think he would not have looked so dumb this season if the game had flowed for him as naturally as it has for the Taku tribe. I think you can trace everybody who wore green to the moment that Chanel decided to risk her vote. You know,
yep.
That moment imploded the entire tribe. It fractured it in all sorts of ways. And now I feel like this is yet another domino to drop in the wake of that really, really poor decision, because now you've got a situation where Mike and Hai, they didn't always trust each other. They kind of had to form this duo late in the game, and Mike was willing to jettison it pretty quickly with just a little bit of nudging from Omar. And you just have to think back to some of those big tribals with Daniel and with Chanel.
Yeah, and we saw it with the orange tribe, yellow tribe last year. Sometimes you just play Survivor too early, and you're forced to play it like it's final five, final six, final four, and it's not. And yeah, Mike is the last remaining player from the green tribe. He is their last hope at a winner. Who would have thought that at the beginning of a season when everybody was all over Chanel and a lot of people liked
Hai
and Chanel were probably the two most popular winner picks from this season.
Yeah.
And then Jenny was somebody that people liked, and Lydia had like her fans.
He did.
Mike was not on anybody's radar really. And now we're at the final seven and he's probably in the best position in the game because everybody is willing to talk to him because he's gullible and because he'll go with it. But at the end of the day, he might look like a moron tonight, right? When Omar says this to him and he eats it up and whatever. However, if he outlasts Omar, who cares? Who cares? It doesn't matter that he looked foolish in that moment, because really, if Omar goes home, what we're learning is that scene was more about painting Omar as a villain so we'd be okay with him going home rather than Mike being a fool. And if Mike does go home before it, so what? He's a 57-year-old guy. He's out there. He's playing as hard as he can with a bunch of guys who understand this game a lot better than he does for the most part. But there was something to be said about tonight after Tribal Council too. After Hai goes home and Jonathan hangs around behind and fist bumps Mike, and Mike kind of gives him a wink and points at him. There's something to be said about all of this. There's a respect for Mike. Whether Mike wins or not, there's a respect for him. There's a like for him. And it's going across all the different areas. So I think it's very interesting.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about Mike. We haven't talked much about Drea. So I want to get your take on Drea. So Drea's coming off of last episode, big tribal council.
Sure.
I got to say, in this episode, it seemed like Jonathan and Drea are like really close out there. Jonathan's doing his, like, what he called his monkey walk, which we used to call him bear crawls, but he was doing that and he ran right at her and she was like, whatever. And they were talking in the shelter for a while when Hai and Lindsay was pitching her plan to get rid of Jonathan right when Jonathan's sitting right there. It seems like Jonathan and Drea are tight no matter what we saw last week. And so I just wanted to state that, but where are you finding Drea fitting in here? She said, after last tribal council, I learned I need to not play with my heart so much.
Right.
But last episode was very much about the heart, and it seemed like it was received positively. Mm-hmm. What do we think is happening to her that might be making her change her mind? Or do we think that that's going to affect her negatively moving forward through the game?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, Drea has been interesting to watch. She's another person who, you know, we've gotten consistent content from, but there have been some episodes that she's been more absent from than others. I thought that last week was really powerful. I thought the tribal was honestly awesome. to see, but I thought it was unfortunate, you know, that she had to burn. She felt like she had to burn Iowa, and maybe she didn't need to. Now, obviously, we still don't know exactly if she felt like she was for sure going home and she was going to play it regardless. And we don't exactly know how that would have turned out. But, you know, we did hear Marianne in this episode add a little bit more, you know, context to that puzzle when she said when she found another idol, which was an awesome moment. She said that she really was frustrated because she didn't feel like she needed to use the idol last episode, which, you know, I think a lot of folks over the last week have been saying maybe she did need to use it, because if she was going to be the backup plan and Drea maybe was going to use her idol no matter what, maybe Marianne would have gone home. So I don't know. That puzzle still work out. But what I do know is that from sort of a, you know, the show really being a reflection of society, I thought it was a powerful moment. And I'm glad that she was able to seemingly recover from it this episode without any, you know, hard feelings or, you know, detriment to her game. In terms of being emotional, it seemed like the context of that comment was about Hai. It wasn't totally clear from the confessional, but it seemed like what she was saying was that she maybe last week was too, she felt too personally connected to some of the people who ultimately were ready to betray her. And she felt like she almost got herself in trouble because she was almost blindsided because she was going with her heart too much. I think that's probably what she was referring to. And this week she was saying that she clearly really liked Hai and clearly had a strong connection with him, but she felt like rather than play with her heart and go with the person that she sort of felt for or liked, that she needed to be more cold and calculating, specifically with regard to the amulet advantage, because she said she wants to vote at Hai in order to narrow down the amulet numbers. And I thought it was, it's very interesting as far as Drea is concerned moving forward. I think two things were really, really stood out to me. One, Lindsay shares the fact that the amulet advantage exists with both Mike and Omer. I think, and I didn't mention this when I was talking about Lindsay. I think this is a strategic error. I think she's over talking here. I don't know if it was the pizza or the beer. She probably had a little bit too much.
It was the family. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah. Or maybe the family, right? Yeah. She could have gotten, but I think she probably overshares here. I think she's probably better off just saying, yeah, let's vote out Hai, and leaving that amulet secret between her and Drea, because I think that information is going to come out. Omer is going to be very happy to use that against her down the road. And that scares me for Lindsay. But I do think it's an interesting reveal as to where Lindsay's head is at, which is that I think she and Drea are very connected. I think that you saw Lindsay, I think, speak very powerfully at the last tribal council in defense of Drea. And I think those two, that could be a big pair to watch. The second clue as to this was in the next time on Survivor. Again, not canon. We could be, you know, being fooled, but Drea is included in that beer and pizza trio alliance as the fourth member, which makes sense because those are going to be the four people in the game that know about the amulet advantage, right? And so together, those four not only make a majority of the seven, but they also, now that Hai is gone, have a steal a vote to use at their disposal. So all of that, I think, bodes well for Drea. But what makes me worry about her is Omer ultimately being sneaky, because we cannot trust the fact that he's genuinely heartfelt part of that four. He knows that he feels like he really has Romeo and Marianne locked in. He feels like he spent a lot of capital trying to bring them into the Omer fold. And I wonder if he would be so willing to just jettison that, kick them to the curb, and go with this other group of four, among whom are, I think, people that can really are big jury threats. You know, like I don't know if he's really going to see Marianne, Romeo, and Jonathan on one hand, three people who he's invested a lot of time in, and then Drea, Mike, and Lindsay on the other hand. You know, he says in the next time on Survivor, again, who knows if we're being duped, but he says, you know, we got two options here. We don't know who the options are. But if those are the options, I worry for Drea, because I think if Omer is going to control another vote or two, at least, I think she is one of the last people in the game that we have not seen him be super connected with. And so far, at least in the post-merge, not being connected to Omer is a death sentence.
It is. It is absolutely a death sentence. And I will say, when you break it down like you just did, it doesn't make sense for him to not go with Jonathan, Marianne, and Romeo. He would beat all three of them in the final. And but this is where all of a sudden now I'm getting to a I keep comparing the season to Gabon, but now I'm getting to a Gabon final three. Of all that happens, Omer loses fire, and now we have Marianne, Jonathan, and Romeo sitting at final three.
Yeah.
It's anybody's game. I mean, Jonathan and Romeo have taken dives. Marianne probably wins in that scenario. Yeah. Like, that is, you know, Omer could create that and just not be able to finish the deal because of the way that Survivor runs now.
And you've got to think, I mean, I know that you like Jonathan. I obviously like him too. We're both from Alabama. But the way that we set up the edit in the last couple episodes for him has been absolutely brutal. They're burying him. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if his physical abilities aside, is he turning into a goat? He looked like a huge threat for a long time. Now you got to start wondering if Lindsay is trashing his strategic game. Omer said today that he's like a terrible strategic Survivor player. If that's the buzz around camp, I think you could start hearing people say, hey, who cares if he wins all the challenges? Who mm-hmm. cares if he wins fire? No one respects his game in the whole, so he'll get zero jury votes.
Well, and I was going to say, I actually think that Drea, and we're not seeing this very clearly, so that's why I'm also worried that Drea is still not going to pull this out, even though she was my preseason winner pick and she's got so many advantages. I think Drea is now the middleman for Jonathan and Lindsay. Lindsay is trying to remove herself from Jonathan, but I think Jonathan and Drea are closer than we believe. Lindsay and Drea are very close, and tonight Lindsay said, hi, or Jonathan, and she goes, hi. Like, it was just immediate. Like, it was no questions asked. We are keeping Jonathan in this game. And right. I think that's what drove the vote tonight of high. But going to your point, why is Drea doing this? Because she's going to beat Jonathan. She sits next to him at the end. And Drea is a competitor who has a better sense of this game than we might think. She knows she can beat Jonathan. She likes Jonathan, sure. But she knows she can beat him. That's more important. She's going to get to the end. And she wants to sit next to him. She doesn't want to sit next to high. She's not confident she can beat high. I think she's also pretty confident she can beat Lindsay. And that's why I think she's trying to get through this game the best way she can. Now, what I am concerned about, and again, you keep saying it's not canon, it doesn't mean anything, we could be getting duped. They tell us that the do or die is happening next week without saying do or die, whatever.
Sure.
The only thing we see after that is Drea doing the, I don't know, I'm, you know. What is she so paranoid about in that moment? And I get worried, well, does she do the challenge foolishly, kind of, and then it screws her and she goes home because of the do or die? I think the person's going home because of the do or die this season. I'm just going to play those odds.
The odds are there. Yeah,
the odds are there. I think it's going to happen. But would Drea play this challenge and put herself at that risk? Maybe. She also think. I mean, she's one of the strongest people out there. I wouldn't. Why wouldn't you? But that's just what worries me about her. That would be a huge bummer. She's had too much game. That would be a huge bummer. But I think that she wants to work with Jonathan at this point. I think that she is trying to get to the end. I think that Drea getting to the end, there's very few people she would lose to. It would depend on how the jury is feeling that day. If they're more into the social aspect, then yes, she would lose to Mike. If they're more into the strategic aspect, yes, she would lose to Omer. But if they're looking for somebody really well-rounded, Drea might be that person. And I have a hard time seeing her losing to a lot of people. She's just got to get there now with everything that she has. I don't know.
And I think the other potential, you know, landmine for Drea is the knowledge of power, right? Yeah. I mean, she could either use that well or use it poorly, or she could successfully use it, but then it puts a target on her back because now people know that she has some sort of advantage. So that's the other thing to watch with Drea is, you know, as we've seen year after year, season after season with Survivor, advantages can be extremely helpful, but if you misplay them, they can blow up in your face. And that is the downside of having so much, the embarrassment of riches that she's had most of the season, is she's got to play them correctly. And if she plays them correctly and she avoids any other landmines, then you're right. Maybe she does get to the end. I don't know if her edit is strong enough for me. I mean, not to read too much into the edit, but I just feel like we don't know her super well. I think we learned tonight that she had a husband. I had no idea.
I had no idea. I was shocked.
I was blindsided. High felt like he was blindsided. I was blindsided. I had no idea she had a husband. So I'm not sure we know her as well as we know some of the other people, which makes me think, just edit-wise, you know,
would they be hiding our winner that well? But then again, we didn't know Erica that well until the merge. So you never can tell with that kind of stuff. So yeah, I still think that Drea is going to be fine for a little bit, but the seeds are being planted, and I'm going to see how this shapes up next week when they release the press photos, and you know, they always spoil something in every press photo that's ever existed. And hey, if she's out there on that thing and there's only three people, she's in my bottom three. You better believe it, because the do or die is coming for somebody.
Yeah.
And I think you're more of a die than a do, but I agree with you. We didn't know she had a husband. I had no idea. I feel like that's something we should have gotten by now.
Sure.
She has been robotic. She has been gamey.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. How High was portrayed. You know, High didn't get any of that personal content. We didn't know High until today, you know, and we got it on this way out. So that's what I worry about Drea from that perspective. But she certainly played, you know, a strong game. I mean, I think she was also someone who was really weighed down by some of the drama in her tribe pre-merge, you know. And also just that, you know, she had to rely on Romeo, who by all accounts has been super paranoid post-merge. Roxroy, who doesn't have a head for the game. Tori was the other person who, you know, was post-merge with her, who was a mess strategically and who she was at odds with, you know. So unlike the Taku four, who came in relatively, did the merge relatively united, you know, the blue four were absolute mess. And she's been able to navigate that regardless, but man, it has not been easy.
Yeah. And this Taku four has stuck together as long as they can, but they're running out of time. And eventually they got to start picking each other off at some point. They can't all sit at the end. So
they do have the numbers, right? They now for the first time, they have the numbers. And I mean, we haven't been seeing a lot of sort of Pagong type rhetoric from them in the edit, but it's happening. It starts to get, you know, more and more attractive to just continue pushing that, especially if Romeo's an easy boot. Think about, you know, Drea. I don't know if you think about Mike, but you know, I think Drea and Mike have both, I mean, to their credit, done a great job of integrating in with the Taku four, so much so that, you know, I think at least for Jonathan, you know, he'd be willing to give up Marianne probably before he gives up Mike or Drea.
And I think Lindsay would be willing to give up some of her people too before giving up Drea. I really think we're at that
Jonathan, point. She's ready to push Jonathan.
Yeah.
We definitely are seeing signs of the Taku four is fracturing, at least with respect to Lindsay and Jonathan, but we'll have to see. And I guess that just leaves Marianne, who we haven't talked about, another great episode for her. I thought it was awesome that she got the idol immediately after burning last week's. And, you know, she said she was shooketh. And she, of course, was giving us a lot, you know, as always, from when in her confessionals and her energy about how excited she was. She very smartly this time said she wasn't going to tell anyone about the idol, which, especially with the knowledge is power, which she doesn't know about, you know, looming. I think is very, very helpful for her. I think now, you know, Marianne is in a good spot. You know, she's been hanging around there. She's been near the bottom for a lot of the post-merge, but we've been able to see her strategic thoughts throughout. You know, I think she's got, we know her personally. She has this unique story about how you need to lean in your weird into your weirdness and be your authentic self. And I think in some ways that is another theme of the season that we're hearing over and over. So I really like Marianne's position now. I don't think anyone is targeting her. Plus, she has the idol. Those two things, I think, could at least get her through the next few votes. And I think if she does sit at the end, we've seen her be able to present her case in some of the confessionals, I think, to a degree that some people were surprised by. You know, she's been able to kind of okey-doke people and pretend to be kind of the young, innocent seminary student at camp and then come back in their confessionals a few times and say, I tricked him. And I think that side of Marianne could come out in a final tribal performance as well. If she were able to make it, I think the big fear for her right now is it doesn't seem like she's being included in some of these new alliances that are forming. And so I think at least right now, she might be reliant on Omer sort of keeping her in the game because he sees her as a number. And then I think in order to sort of leapfrog him, I think maybe she would have to be the one to betray him, or at least hope someone else betrays him so that she can get a more preferable sort of final four or final five for her that she can maneuver, because right now she's not necessarily in a ton of people's plans outside of Omer, from at least what we've seen.
Well, and I think the best thing for Marianne right now is that she's not going to be the target next week, I don't think.
Sure.
And nobody knows she has the idol, and she's got to play it at six or five.
Yep.
and then it's fire at four. We saw fire challenge tonight. It was Mike versus High. High is now out of the, I'm sorry, was it Jonathan versus High or Mike versus High? I forget who it was. Whoever it was, though, High's out of the game. I think it was Jonathan. Jonathan's still in the game. Maybe Jonathan's making fire at some point. But yeah, Marianne, I think, is in a, Marianne is one of the weirdest edits I think I've ever seen. And I wouldn't be surprised if she wins at all. I really wouldn't. At first, in the first five episodes, I was like, she's annoying. Nobody liked, whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm officially at the point where I'm all in on this. This season is about being your weird self.
Right.
Mike said tonight he's dumb like a fox. Marianne is dumb like a fox, too. Marianne knows she is so much smarter than what she is presenting to all of them.
Right.
And her Jenga analogy tonight was great.
Yeah,
she's had a lot of those moments at tribal councils. When she needs to turn it on, she turns it on. And I think that is what's so fascinating about her. And again, when I go back to Survivor and I say, don't just cast people to cast them. If you're going to cast somebody young who can win the damn game. Because we've seen a lot of people get cast because they're young and attractive. But they, are they going to win? I don't know. Julia Sokolowski maybe could have won the game. Natalie Tenorelli was never going to win the game. Pick people who can win the game. Give me that secondary layer. And I'm seeing that layer of Marianne now, and I'm like, man, why couldn't she win this game?
Well, I think she's also just a singular personality, like, right? Like, we've just never had – I mean, she's just got to be one of the greatest casting finds ever. We've never seen anyone like Marianne who just completely pops off the screen. And sure, I can understand if you're out there 24/7 with her that it could be a little bit grating. But also strategically, it's honestly an amazing play for her. Because people view her so much as, oh, Marianne, you know, she's so happy-go-lucky, she's so exuberant. But, you know, no one's thinking, no one realizes that she's out there playing hard and strategizing. And so in a season when we keep hearing about how the front runner is going to get their head lopped off, you know, you wonder if she can hang around long enough to be the front runner at the very end. But she's got to get there. The idol certainly helps. You know, if Omer decides again that she's not much of an asset for him and he wants to go with this other possible four-person alliance that we were briefly shown, then she could be the obvious boot there because, you know, of her, Jonathan, and Romeo, I think she's pretty obviously the biggest jury threat of the three, at least from what we're seeing. So, If that's the way that Omer decides to go next episode, I think we could see Marianne blindsided with an idol in her pocket.
Yeah. Hey, that could happen. And I'm interested to see how it's going to play out. Again, I think what's great about this season is the edit has been very even. If you look at it, it's got to be one of the most evenly edited seasons of Survivor, especially in the last like 15, 20 seasons. I mean, it's really not even close. And everybody has their own thing. Everybody has their own personality. Everybody has their own style of gameplay. And we're not being told on this season that one way is better than the other. Because we were shown that High's game bodiness was not the right way to play the game. We haven't been outwardly told that Omer's way of playing is the right way to play. We haven't been told that Jonathan's way of playing is the right way to play. We haven't been told that Lindsay or Drea or Marianne or Mike is playing the game the right way. And I think that's why this is so fascinating. We are really at this point, like you said, I don't see Jonathan winning at this point. I think that is his edit in the last two episodes has taken a nosedive. I don't see Romeo winning. But if Jonathan, Romeo, and, I don't know, Lindsay sit at the end, Jonathan could still beat Lindsay. And I think that's what's so nice about this is we have seven people left in the game who are unique, who all have their own stories. And we probably have four or five legitimate winner picks here. And none of them are obvious winner picks, maybe with the exception of Omer. If he's able to run this, we're all going to look back and say that was like a Nick Wilson thing. How come we were paying attention? But sure. Why do people love David versus Goliath, despite the fact that Nick Wilson was a super obvious winner? Because the cast was amazing. Everybody around him was so much fun to watch that you didn't care that Nick was going to win because you liked watching Angelina and Alec and Carl and Gabby and Christian and Kara. That was fun to watch.
Yep.
And Davey, who I forgot. I apologize. But on this season.
And Mike.
Mike White. I know. I forget Mike White. That's what I'm saying, though. Amazing cast. Who cares that we knew he was going to win the whole time? If Omer wins this and it's, you know, he gets to the final, I've loved the ride. But if Omer doesn't get there, no matter who is sitting in the final three, there's going to be two contenders. That's just a fact. And I look forward to when that happens. And I think it's vast improvement over season 41. Cut out Do or Die. Cut out the Hourglass twist.
Yep.
And this
keep the casting. Keep the casting, folks. Whoever's doing the casting these days, keep them, because and just replicate this cast. But yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll just say about the winner is I think last episode, how that final tribal ended, I think could loom large here with the ultimate winner. And I think that we've always heard that the first few members of the jury sort of set the tone with the culture. Now, there are rumors that last season's jury culture was really toxic and negative and they were always fighting. I doubt that's the case this year. But whoever is the first few people to go, they're going to sort of set the tone for what the prevailing view is in Ponderosa for each of the remaining players. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that, you know, the three that came across looking amazing to the jury, including even to Tori, were Lindsay, Drea, and Marianne last week. And so I think that those three in particular at least have, I think, a leg up. Now, that doesn't mean that they're our winner, but I just think that, you know, depending on who any of those are up against, you like their momentum so far with the jury. And you could also just see High joining that jury group that we have now and sort of fitting in pretty well with whatever their prevailing view is.
I have one huge thing to say, and then I'm done. I think the biggest issue for Jonathan, Mike, Romeo, and Omer is that they weren't even there. They have no idea what happened. Jonathan was there, sorry, but Mike, Omer, you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
They weren't there. They don't know what happened. The jury doesn't know how they would have felt about it. They don't know how they would have reacted to it. But right now, the biggest thing that's happened to the jury so far on this season is that vote out. And everybody on that jury was there for it except for High right now. And the people in the game, if they get to the end and have to sit next to Drea, Lindsay, or Marianne, how do they sit there and talk about that moment when they don't even really know what happened? All they're hearing is interpretations. They can't defend themselves against what happened there, and they can't state anything about it, and they're not going to get a chance to have a moment as big as that to the jury the entire time. It's just not going to happen.
Yep.
And that's why I think that could be absolutely devastating for Mike, for Omer, if they sit at the end against Mary Andrea or Lindsay, because they don't know, and they don't know to vote those people out because they don't know what really happened.
Yeah.
And that's huge.
Very good point. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be the number one topic of conversation at Ponderosa, right? You know, right now, back then, it has to be, right? And when High comes back, he'll obviously update them on what happened with his boot, but then probably they'll spend the rest of the time updating him on that seminal moment at Tribal. And obviously with the way the game is going to hasten the pace in terms of the number of days that are left, you just got to feel like for the majority of the jurors and the majority of the time they're in Ponderosa, that's the moment they're going to be talking from the game that they're going to be talking about the most, and what it says about society, what it says about real life, what it says about the plight of racial minorities on Survivor. And for those three women to be able to harken back to that moment, it could be really powerful for them if one of them can make it.
Yep. I absolutely agree. Vaughn, you got anything else before we get out of here?
I got nothing. I just gotta keep rooting for my final three here in the fantasy team. You know, I gotta hope that I got the winner, and I gotta hope that Jonathan doesn't go on an immunity tear, I guess, so I can keep it close enough that the winner will tip me over the top. But yeah, no, I just say that it's been a joy to be back podcasting with you mid-season. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again next year as well. And it's especially a big joy to do it with such an amazing season. And hopefully next season will be just as good.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to jump in here real quick and just do a couple quick prop bets just so people understand what we're up against with High going home. He wanted, let me see here. So High won an individual immunity, was blindfolded, made the jury, had a blurred mouth, had a confessional in every episode he was in, had an episode title, went home with an unused advantage because the amulet does count. So all of that stuff goes against him. Tonight, Omer had his mouth blurred. So that's a good one. Everybody got that one if you had that. And the episode title was also Armor. I don't know if anything else really happened in this one. People just kind of moved up. And then obviously Lindsay won individual immunity. So those are the big ones tonight. As people get voted out, we make sure that we hit them all. High ended up with seven votes against. So he lands in that middle ground where he doesn't get you the five or less or the 10 or more. And that's it. Vaughn, always great to have you on. Glad we were able to do this twice in one season. The last time we had you on prior to this season was in the preseason of season 40. Then COVID hit and we didn't do anything. I think the last time we had you on during a season was all the way back in 39, which was what, 3 years ago now. So it's great to be able to do this. Great to be able to have you on. Always great to hear your perspective mid-season and actually get to hear you defend some of your picks and talk about the great picks that you made early on and why they're actually working out. So thanks for being here. Everybody else, thanks for listening. Become a patron, patreon.com/survivorspecialist. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that fun social media stuff. And subscribe on YouTube. We're almost to 10,000. And I said that if we hit 10,000 before the season ends, I'll read the spoilers because that's what the one guy in the comments said I read anyway. So I might as well read them live, right? So anyway, that's all I got. We'll see you all next time. Vaughn, thank you so much.
Thank you.